Okay, this is going to be so much fun, isn't it? Thanks for being here on time. We'll do the quiz right quick. Timothy's hometown? Bonus, what language did they speak? Well, that too.
Made up language.
Listerian?
Yeah.
Listerine, I think, was what. Sorry. The language of the Lycaonians is what his premier said.
Anyway,
you have to read Acts 14 to see it. By the way, what chapter was that in?
14.
Acts 14, good. Grandmother's name?
Lois.
Oh, sorry, yeah. It's Lois, remember they're in reverse alphabetical order by age. Does that help?
No. My grandmother also.
Okay, mother's name then. Yeah, or actually, it's probably Eunice, but that doesn't rhyme very well with Lois. So Lois and Eunice is any way to say it. Sorry, Jewish Christian. Father's religion?
Nothing
or pagan, likely because Timothy had not been circumcised. And his mother and grandmother taught him, and Paul claimed his, you know, kind of his fathership with regard to the faith. So I think all that's evidence of that. What was the city Timothy was working in at the writing of these letters?
Ephesus.
What was his job there?
Evangelist.
Actually, I should say what was his job, not necessarily what was his job there. But anyway.
Because what was his job there?
He was an evangelist at the moment working in Ephesus. So, but the other implies that they somehow had hired him to be their evangelist. I just don't think that's the way it worked then, nor does it work that way now, even though most churches think that way. But
how would that be different from being a minister?
Well, the word minister means servant, so it's a more general term. And you'll see in this chapter, actually, that Paul describes himself as an apostle in verse 1, but a diakonos, a minister, a servant, down in verse 15 or something.
All evangelists are ministers.
We're all ministers in a sense. We just have a different aspect of service. Now, I know what caused you to ask that question, and I really appreciate it. Why did she ask that question? How's that different from a minister? She meant, I think, I could tell, a capital M when she said it. Didn't you? A minister.
Or maybe a preacher.
Yeah, or with a capital P.
That's what he was doing, because he was serving them as far as...
Right, he was serving, right.
Help them to...
But don't we sometimes use the term minister as a kind of a title for the guy who stands in the pulpit quite often in the service? In fact, what would you put on your business card? Well, you wouldn't put pastor, because we all know better than that. You know, that's what an elder is, right? You wouldn't put servant. Everybody'd be confused by that. You wouldn't put diakonos. They don't even have a clue what that's about. So you put minister with a capital M. And that's become a title, hasn't it? The person who preaches most often and maybe is supported full-time by the church to do that work. Yeah,
although, is that even though confused a little bit? Because, you know, it's like... People will talk about the ministries at a church.
I know. I know.
There's a minister, so that even that's a little confusing.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's not even helpful, even whatever it's intended to be. Yeah.
Which minister? The youth minister?
No, the head minister.
Yeah, all the head minister.
Yeah, so we're kind of joking around about it, but what you see is the effect on our language of the corruption of really the New Testament pattern. And we struggle with that, don't we? Anyway. Yes. Now, I think the ministries of a church is maybe almost the most appropriate use of the term. Now, I don't mean by that the program and the extra organizations. I just mean, yeah, these are ways the church serves. And if you use it that way, that seems to make sense.
Do you see his role in, call it whatever you want, in converting people or more encouraging, exhorting, edifying, admonishing?
Right, so obviously it's both, and we'll see that here. If you look at the charge given to Timothy, it's really to address a specific problem which seems local to that group there, right? Charge certain men not to teach other ones, which is what that says. On the other hand, evangelist, the word itself means the good newsizer, right, in the Greek. So it's clearly announcing the gospel. And you'll see both of those in this chapter, right? You'll see, actually... Paul says, I'm a minister, servant of the gospel, and he'll talk about that. And later in 2 Timothy, he says, do the work I'm event, good newsizer, right?
Yeah.
So now, so what determines which is more important? I think it's where you are. If he's stuck in Ephesus with a charge from Paul to go take care of this false teaching, I think he's edifying. In fact, you'll see the word edify in this text, right? It's not this or that, but rather edifying, right?
So there's we had a brief conversation before class when you weren't in here about when he was traveling with Paul, maybe being more in the evangelist role.
Teaching the law.
Exactly. But then when he's locked down in Ephesus, maybe more like she would.
And yet, I think the final charge, chapter 4 of 2 Timothy, Paul is saying kind of the bigger rubric is do the work of an evangelist. Fulfill your ministry. But he says, so there's a service and both in one verse. All right. Sorry, I'm answering these questions. What journey did Timothy go with Paul? Second, he's highlighted there because that's where he starts with, but it's clear he's on the third journey too. Approximate age at the writing of this letter? Yeah, 30s, let's say. Reasons for the letters to Timothy, at least the first one for sure. Yeah, even more direct than that probably. Yes, instruct the brethren, there's all kind of sermon topics listed, but what else? We're going to study tonight. Yes, stop the false teaching. Stand in the way of that. By the way, it says, for this cause I left you. Does that suggest that Paul had been there for a while? Yeah, I mean, now once again, this doesn't matter anything in the book of Acts where Paul went somewhere and left Timothy there. So it's probably in that period between the imprisonments, if it was a second prison. One writer I was reading indicated that Paul was there. He could have addressed it himself, but he thought that would either be a challenge for Timothy or it would be easy enough Timothy could handle it. I don't know, something like that. But interesting. Why didn't Paul address it? Well, he had to go on to Macedonia or something like that. But anyway, what was the first Ephesus contact? If I had bet out, I mean, which journey of Paul did that occur on?
First.
In the first. Nope, not the first. It was the second. It was at the very end. Remember, he was diverted from probably to go to Macedonia and came around. But on his way back, he stopped and for only 3 months was there. And the only reason in the synagogue, did he establish the church there? I don't think we know. But that's he definitely had taught some people. And then what journey did he spend 3 years there? And, the third journey. And really, on the end of the third journey, he stopped by and at Miletus and talked with whom?
The elders
of that church. So there's some maturity implied there. Paul's time there, as well as the elders that were there. It was on the third journey where the greatest Diana of Ephesians and the book burning and the riots and all that. If you know all those stories, you can read about those in what chapter in Acts?
19.
Yes, 19. That's right. All of the 19th chapter is pretty much about that 3-year period. So here are the objectives. Let's see if we retained anything over the last 3 days. We just covered all of those. What was his circumstance when he wrote the letters? We should talk about that. What was Paul's circumstance? In between imprisonments. And it looks to me like he was just traveling around. Many of the early fathers claim he got all the way to Spain during that period of time. And actually, if you look closely, you can see all these commitments that he made in the book of Acts that he didn't quite get to. If you stack all those up, you can imagine almost a history of that 2-3 year period is that he went here because he said he was going to, and he went here. And so, or during the prison epistles, he said, I'd like to come to see you. So if you add all those up, you could almost, if he kept his word on all of those, you could almost imagine reconstruct a traveling plan for that, including getting to Spain eventually. We covered that. What are the themes? Does anybody remember the themes? I'm sitting here trying to remember if I can remember. Really.
Fulfill your
commission.
Expect evil.
Hold to the word. And then the fourth one only applies to the first.
Conduct
in the church. That is how do churches operate? I think is kind of the thing we should look for. There are other important messages in there, but I think those kind of summarize a whole lot of the content. Let's see. I'm going to do the chapters in just a minute. Let me see if you got that. Tell me a little bit of the history of the church. We saw that it was established, or at least first visit on the second journey. 3 years is probably really established on the third journey. What else? What's the next part of the history that we see of a church at Ephesus?
Well,
the next communication.
They have elders.
Pardon?
They have elders.
Yeah, that's in Miletus, but that's still third journey. So then what's the next thing in the New Testament? No,
that's
the book of Ephesians, a prison epistle, right? So that's a few years later. Now, that's the first imprisonment, so then the books of Timothy come next in our history. We're going to look at it. What's the last view we have of the book of Revelation, so spanning a 40-year period, beginning with pretty auspicious beginning, I would say, and ending with having left with first love and trouble along the way. All right, here are the themes, and these are our goals. Commit to our responsibilities, respond to evil in the right way, without discouragement, and with the Word as our tool. And we'll see that especially in 2 Timothy, where the opposition is addressed more directly. And then be, what's the word in 2 Timothy? A diligent worker who doesn't need to be ashamed of that kind of thing. And then also think about preparing others. That's an overarching theme to think about. What was Paul doing as an older man, knowing he was going to die soon, and here's a younger man just starting his... It's hard to be... bad word to use, but career, right? As a preacher, so starting his work as an evangelist. All right, chapter content. Can we go through it quickly? Chapter 1 of Timothy. Initial charge. That's a gimme. Right? All right, have a chapter 2. Now, what happens from 2 through 6? There's ands, right? So any answer that doesn't have an and in the middle is wrong. All right, now go from there. Chapter 2. Men and women, is that the right order?
Yes.
And then chapter 3. Yes. Then? False and true. Here's another, I think, an important study tool. That is, false, and I wish it said teachers. I'll say that again. Though it describes teaching, it's more about describing the character of the teacher. There's another chapter in these two books that's very similar to 4 in the sense of its theme. That is to say, false teaching and error is just going to, and I'll use the term, grow worse and worse. You know the other chapter would be? Maybe we'll think of it when we get there. Okay, how about 5?
Widows and others.
Widows and others. And others include elders and young and old and so on. Younger widows as well. And then 6?
Poor and rich.
Very good. 2 Timothy?
Don't be afraid.
Not afraid or ashamed, right? Chapter 2?
Images.
There are pictures there. Quickly, what are some of the pictures you can look at?
Soldier.
What else? Farmer. Athlete. I think a bricklayer or a road builder or something who's handling a right. Those are all images that are there, in addition to some Old Testament references that are. Okay, and chapter 2. Oh, we did that. Chapter 3.
Perilous
times. That's the chapter, I think, that's very similar to chapter 4 in 1 Timothy, where he says there's evil times coming where men will be, and then he lists a long list of things. Very similar to 1 Timothy 3. Not the same list, but still that same idea. Just, and then how do you prepare for it? What do you personally do to be prepared to deal with that? And then chapter 4, give me?
Final charge.
Okay, good. All right, since I'm probably wasting a little bit of time, but just since we're on this is fresh, let's try randomness, okay?
See if we can... Careless times.
Okay, that's good. I feel like I should throw these in the air when we're done. 1 Timothy 3.
Elder deacon.
Good. 1 Timothy 1.
Initial charge.
There's a good side here. What about 1 Timothy 4? Good. 1 Timothy 1, we did that. 2 Timothy 2. Images of worker, images of service. 2 Timothy 4.
Father charge.
1 Timothy 2.
Yeah.
1 Timothy 6.
Poor and rich.
Okay, Annette can't answer anymore. 1 Timothy 5.
Widows and others.
Yeah, and then 2 Timothy 1.
Don't be afraid.
That. Does this help? I hope when you read it that when you start those chapters, those names come to your head. At least you can say, well, Marty got those completely wrong when you read it, but at least it'll be in your head to think through what the chapters are about. All right, let's look at lesson two, and that will be chapter one. Here are our objectives. I'd like you to be able to repeat the command Timothy was to give to the ungodly teachers in Ephesus, okay? What has he told them? To tell them that's pretty easy. Just don't do it. And then, what? I changed the objectives. These are not on the lesson sheet. This middle one is not. As I studied it, I was thinking, I want you to understand something different about this chapter than what's in the objectives. So it doesn't matter since you didn't study the objectives. So we're just going to do something different in the class period. Yeah. I'd like you to maybe explain the relationship between the two excursions and link those to the main point of 1 Timothy 1, the whole chapter. And I don't know that I know the answer, by the way. But I want to explore that today as kind of our primary study. And then repeat the faithful saying. Can you do that already? What's the faithful saying in this chapter? There are three others we're going to see before we're done. But this is a faithful saying, chapter 4 will say, and is worthy of all acceptation. That's right. Yeah. Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners. The reason that's significant is some people, scholars, and I use that term almost derisively, and that is they look at 1 and 2 Timothy and say, well, this is not the same Paul, or the vocabulary is different, and he doesn't address any of the theology like he does in Romans and other things. Why would that be? Why does he not describe the salvation by faith and not by works, and you know what I mean, all that, reference to Abraham, father of the faithful, all that, in 1 Timothy?
Well, one thing is it's a different purpose. I mean, he's
well, for sure, it's a different purpose, right? Yeah, good.
Timothy had traveled the woods and heard all.
Wouldn't you think Timothy really probably knew everything in the letter anyway?
Yeah.
And it was written to Christians who've been around for 10 or 12 years. So, yeah, we're moving on to something different now. What were you saying?
I said he already knew it all.
Yeah, he already knew all that kind of thing, right? Yeah. In fact, I was just thinking about this a little bit as I was thinking the last couple of days studying this. I doubt if there's anything in this letter Timothy didn't already know. And it already said in order in Corinth what Paul told him to do in chapter 4, I think, in 1 Corinthians. I left you in Corinth so to remind the people the way I teach in everywhere in every church. You think Timothy knew all this stuff? What's the point of the letter if he knew all this stuff? Did he not know the qualifications of elders?
Pretty sure he did.
I'm thinking he would.
He's also supposed to read it to the...
Yeah, don't you think that this letter is a kind of authorization, an authority source that Timothy can kind of say, hey, look, this is from an apostle, right?
And this isn't just from me, it's just kids.
It's to you guys, right, exactly right. Doesn't that make sense as far as the letter goes? And so Paul says, let no man despise your youth and other things. I just doubt there's anything in here that's a new revelation to Timothy that's not already been taught in other churches, even by Timothy, right? And yes.
It seems like he and Titus both are just troubleshooters.
He trusts
them, he sends them off.
Yep.
Really amazing men for young men, what they're doing.
Yeah, right.
And it seems like, if I remember right, Timothy was more on the timid side.
We're going to talk about it. We talked a little bit about that last period. Yeah, right. The passage we didn't look at, Patrice asked the question, is he just saying, you know, I forget her two choices, but you know, we kind of decided he was just kind of giving a kick in the pants to go do what he already knew how to do and you know, be encouraged to do it. But 1 Corinthians 16, and I don't know what verse the latter half of that chapter, Paul says, if Timothy comes, and by the way, it looks like he's already been there, if you look. If he comes, see that he be with you without fear. Interesting. Why would he say that? You know. But anyway, that's you can see that in 1 Corinthians. Anyway, so those are his jobs. All right, let's read it. And so we've said this is Paul's charge to Timothy. That, remember initial charge. Do you find that charge in here somewhere? Where would you find it? I'm gonna start with verse 3. Let's see. Pardon? First verse, is it anywhere else in here?
18?
Yeah, at the end of this section. So it kind of is an envelope. And really, it seems to me that he kind of touches on it in verse 11 and 12 in the middle. Kind of in the middle. Look closely after this excursion about the lawful use of law, Paul says, he says, and if there be anything contrary to the sound or healthy teaching, didaskalos, doctrine, y'all know doctrine, teaching, all that's the same Greek word. the healthy or sound teaching, according to the gospel of the glory and the blessing of God, which was committed to my trust. You get the sense that Paul had a charge, actually. Committed to my trust. And then I thank God enabled me, and for that he counted me faithful, appointing me to his service. You see, there's a sense in which Paul has kind of this same charge of sound doctrine, right, of healthy teaching. And so in a way, he starts by saying, you got this job to stop some men. I have the charge of the sound teaching, right? And at the end he says, I commit to you this charge. I commit to you, Timothy. See, so it kind of is an envelope in this chapter of this charge of being a gospel carrier, a gospel protector, a sound teaching promoter, right? And is it going to be easy? No, in fact, look at how he actually described it in verse 18. What does he call it? Easy? Cakewalk? Right? Wage the good warfare, yeah. And then holding the faith and a good conscience, which matches verse 5. The end of the charge is love out of a pure heart and a good conscience. So verse 5, I think the charge there is the charge to Timothy, not so much the charge to these different teachers. Okay, so I'm wanting to read it, but I'm holding the American Standard, and I didn't.
I am too.
Yeah, right. So in and out of order. We'll know more than all the rest of you, but we can read it out in different translations. Who has a new King James? All right, Danny, how about... okay, good, Chester. Read through verse 11, 3 through 11 in the new King James. So I'm telling you that there's this kind of a structure that I see where he says, charge someone, and then he says in verse 5, and this charge is out of love with your conscience and all that. And then in the middle, he talks about the gospel committed to my trust. I have this charge, in a sense. And then at the end, he's saying, I'm committing this charge to you to wage the good warfare. You see that? So it's almost like there's three touch points in the text on this idea of being responsible to do something with the gospel. Protect it, spread it, teach it. Okay, so three through. So what we're going to read now is this section is here. Go ahead, Chester.
As I urged you, when I went into Macedonia, remain in Ephesus that you may charge so that they teach no other doctrine, nor give heed to fables and endless genealogies which cause disputes rather than godly edification which is in faith. Now, the purpose of the commandment is love from a pure heart, from a good conscience, and from sincere faith, from which some, having strayed, have turned aside to idle talk, desiring to be teachers of the law, understanding neither what they say nor the things which they affirm. But we know that the law is good if one uses it lawfully. Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous person, but for the lawless and insubordinate, and the ungodly, and for sinners, and the unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers, and murderers of mothers, and manslayers, for fornicators, for sodomites, for kidnappers, for liars, for perjurers, and if there is any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine, according to the glorious gospel of the blessed God, which was committed to my trust.
Okay, what's that about? What did we just read about? What's that section about?
It seems there were some false teachers. Teaching, trying to teach the law.
Yeah. And, so that That seems to be who he's aiming Timothy at, right? Charged them to stop. And by the way, verse 5, unfortunately, the New King James says, now the purpose of the commandment. That word is the same as charge in that upper verse and the verse below. It's the same Greek word here, this word. It's the same as is used up here. Charge them. And then at the end, this charge I commit to you, O Timothy. It's a command, it's an imperative, it's a thing to do. Unfortunately, you know, it seemed to me important if the same Greek words used, it'd be nice to, at least in the proximity, to use the same English word. But I don't know. I mean, maybe the context made it different. But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm off topic. So
does the American Standard use the same word?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, okay.
Of course, Danny. thank you for asking that. Yeah, it does.
So what does yours say in verse 3?
It says, that thou mightest charge certain men not to teach a different doctrine than verse 5, but the end of the charge is love. See, so that helps me connect those ideas. Why am I giving you this charge? Or why are you giving them this charge? And then I get to the end of the chapter and he says, verse 18, this charge I commit to you. So I'm connecting all those ideas to say, hey, this is all about his instructions to Timothy, really. The motive and other. But that's really not what most of these verses are about in this section, is it? Is it about the charge? Is it really even about the false teaching per se? Jason, answer. He's frowning and shaking his head. What's it about? Yeah. That's the same struggle, man. Help him out. This is where we're here to... I'm assuming you just answered all the factual questions, but what is it?
Who's a lot about the law?
It does say a lot about the law. More than perhaps is on the surface, right? It's a list of sinners. I mean, bad sinners, isn't it? Bad things. Like what?
Mother
killers, father killers, other people killers. What else?
Homosexual
kidnappers. Is that? Yeah. It seems like it's about that, right? But Jason, you said something about the law, didn't you? No, somebody said something. Yeah. So look at the text, and you can use the New King James on your lesson sheet. It's a little bit. But the New King James does a good job at this. Do you know the Greek word for law? Nomos, you know, is a term for law. I'm trying to think of an English word that has that in it, but I can't write this minute. But anyway. Notice in verse 7, what seems to be there are these motives of these teachers that he's supposed to address here. Yeah, there's some kind of fame, but they want to be, yes, they desire something, right? And what do they want to be? Teachers of the law. And go back up to the mythos word, which is up here in verse 4. What does it seem like they're paying their attention to and can't get off of? Genealogies and fables. Where would you find genealogies in the Bible?
Old Testament,
right. Go ahead. And
well, but there was also, I mean, all of this other Jewish writings.
Good. Yes.
So yeah. I guess that's what is a little confusing to me, because when I think in this context and the fables, it's like they're wanting to mix the fables into the law. And, you know, it is a little confusing because I read the first part and I say, oh, okay, the fables.
Yeah. Somebody look up this verse right quick, because there's a very similar phrase in Titus where the connection to Jewish writings, I think, is explicit there. What is he saying first of all?
It says Jewish myths. Not paying attention to Jewish myths.
Jewish myths. He just labels them as having connection with Jewish writings, I think, which may not be Old Testament or, you know, Scripture myths, but... And so there's something going on where there is a use of the old law, and I'll show you there's more connection there, but also a connection to myths and so on. One writer said that a lot of the Jewish folks, to kind of make it more interesting and complicated, would take the genealogies and do all kind of number crunching with them, you know. Or they would invent wives for these men who were in the genealogy and come up with stories about them, you know, and their families and stuff. So that would be the other writings and stuff. And then out of that, which, of course, is so confusing, right? And so he kind of goes on to say, I wish the text was up here. He says, they don't even know what they're talking about, and they're making all these assertions. They strongly affirm, there's a missing word in the translation there. They affirm through and through, right, based on these things that they don't even understand what they're talking about. So anyway, I want you to notice, go ahead, Jesse.
I have a question. So wasn't part of the purpose that people kind of thought about these genealogies is to kind of affirm their position?
It could be.
To a certain extent.
It sounds like, though, these might even be, I mean, these are way off in Asia, you know, but I have the idea that it's a little bit more like astrology or the numerology kind of things you do in the Old Testament, where you count verses or count words. But I'm making all that up. He just seems to, but he's just so, the reason I say that is, he's just so dismissive of it. I mean, listen to the language. Give heed to fables, endless genealogies, which minister questions. And that word questioning doesn't just mean reasonable questions. It kind of implies disputes or doubtings or confusion. So they kind of almost revel in that, rather than a dispensation of God, which is a faith. And he talks about the contrast, of course, is the things that edify, which I can't find right this minute. And then in verse 7, his argument, be teachers of the law, though they understand neither what they're saying nor the conclusions that they come to strongly, is kind of the sense of that next phrase. So it's, they're thinking, saying these facts, they don't understand them. And then he goes on, though, this is what I want to try to get at, is they desire to be teachers of the law, but then in verse 8, to the rest, what's he just saying there? What's that all about? We know the law is good, blah, blah, blah.
The law he's talking about here, it is referring to the law.
I think in this case he is, and I'll explain that, why I think it makes sense. In fact, let's just do it right now. Let's just look at some of these sins. Which commandments does this remind you of? Lawless, unruly, ungodly. What does that remind? What does it mean? The first part, right, where it says, don't have any other gods before me, right? Take my name, that kind of thing. Let's keep on going. For murderers, what does that one remind? Oh, sorry, for unholy and profane. What commandment does that remind you of? No? No? Unholy and keep it holy and keep the Sabbath and keep it. It's the fourth commandment. I think it's a holy and holy. I'm just saying the words make me think of that. But let's keep on going. What's the next one?
Murderers.
What does that remind you of? That's what I kill. Okay, what about someone who is kills their father or mother?
Honor
your father and mother, right? What about somebody who kills somebody? Oh, sorry, you're covering that. Fornicators. What does that remind you of? What commandment? Right. Well, do not. That's why I commit adultery, right? That's kind of there, right? And then what about, let's see, fornicators, abusers, that would fall into the category. For liars, does that remind you of a commandment? Don't bear false witness. False swearers, right? And it seems like I've skipped one about manslayers.
Yeah.
Kidnappers, right. What does that remind you of? By the way, the literal Greek word is stealers of men. What does that remind you of a commandment? Thou shalt not steal, right? So it doesn't take too much imagination to see that as he goes through this list, if you know the Ten Commandments, especially in the Septuagint, you're thinking, oh, yeah, that sounds familiar. And he is kind of saying, you know, those are useful, but what are they useful for? For us who are saved by Christ?
Those
who were in that situation, who are sinners, right? So what I was going to say here is, well, so what the deal here is, it seems like he's saying, here's how you use the law. Here's the proper use. Isn't that what he's saying? Look at verse, and I'm sorry to be so. Yeah, verse 7. They are the teachers of the law. That's the word, nomos. They understand you. In verse 8, we know that the law, nomos, noun, is good if it is used lawfully. Now, your translation may say properly. It's lawfully. It's the same Greek word. Now an adverb. Right? The law is good if it's used, adverb, lawfully. It's a play on words, for sure. And it keeps on going. Look at, I keep losing my place, right? Where am I?
Verse 8.
Yeah, if you use the law, and as knowing this, the law is not made for the righteous men, but for the
lawless.
You see that? There's kind of an emphasis there. He's using it as an adjective, an adverb, and a noun, and actually a compound noun. For in one case, so teachers of the law, by the way, is the same thing. It's just one word. It's nomos didaskalos. It's teachers of the law. So they desire to be what? The teachers of the law. You know, in the same with people. Yes, Steve?
When I was studying this section, I may have hit this wrong. I was putting too much into it, but I was thinking back to the first century people that were thought to be great minds.
Yeah.
They would have followings, and a lot of their teaching was done in the form of, you know, creating argument and talking and controversy. And it seems like here it's saying these people that have the desire to be teachers of the law.
How are they using the law?
Using the argument type.
They're coming up with these weird things you'd never find in a million years. They don't even know what they're talking about.
It's more distracting, and
that's
he's trying to set them in order. It's
right.
Not saying it's not wrong. It's
useful.
Not saying it's wrong to be a teacher.
Or that the law is
right.
It's not that the law is confusing or somehow or another going to be not worth studying, but it's used lawfully, properly, kind of by saying what's really used for is to convict sinners. Right. Now keep that in your head, because in a way that, so when I read it, I'm thinking, is Paul so old that he wanders off like I do in these, you know, different topics, and then he comes back to what's going on here? But somehow or another, he's saying, this is the problem. They want to be teachers of the law. They're basing their teaching on the law or something around it, Jewish writings. And yet, that's not what the law is for. It was to convict sin, right? It's for those people to see, not for, in a way, you could, I'm not there yet, but for those who have been redeemed from the sin that they
I keep going in my mind, I keep thinking back to the fact that he's comparing those that want to teach about the law to, in verse 10, at the end where he talks about teaching the sound doctrine, according to the glorious gospel. They're wanting to sit back here and talk about the law and teach all this, but they're missing the glorious gospel that is what they should be teaching.
I'll let the glorious word out. But you see, he comes back to this idea. It's not according to the good news, the gospel account. But it has a use. It's good. And so that's the first excursion. Now, let's read. Danny, you have the... Actually, we all have the New King James on our lesson sheet, don't we? So maybe I'll...
Learning, although I think Paul got off... Even as a younger guy, I mean, all of us know
it wasn't being old.
I just say an old guy. I'll do that all the time.
But I'm always, because I think the Holy Spirit was guiding this, and I think what appears at first to be an excursion, I'm convicted of this, but I don't know the answers, that it has a purpose. It's there, and it has something to it that we need to understand. Because he does keep coming back to the theme about this committed charge, do what you're supposed to do. So I was trying to, as one of my objectives, I wanted to explore the excursions and see if we could rein them in and make them not excursions, really. They have a real purpose. So let's look at the second excursion. I'm sorry to call it that. Verse 12, I thank Christ Jesus our Lord who enabled me because he counted me faithful, putting me into the diaconate, the service, the ministry. Although I was formerly a blasphemer, persecutor, insolent man, but I obtained mercy because I did it ignorantly in unbelief. The grace of our Lord was exceedingly abundant with faith and love which are in Christ Jesus. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance that Christ Jesus came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am chief. However, for this reason I obtained mercy that in me first Christ Jesus might show a long suffering as a pattern to those who are going to believe on him for everlasting life. And then the doxology. Praise just stops. He just kind of gets lost and goes into a, maybe a hymn of the day. I don't know. Maybe he just came up with that in the moment, right? So what's that about? What's that excursion about? Yeah, Jason.
I'm not convinced that it's another excursion.
I'm not either, but I'm trying to get there.
I think it's the same thing he's talking about.
Yeah, does he get into sinners again and deep terrible sins?
Yeah, because he's
blasphemy, persecuting.
From, you know, what the law is for, as you said initially, it's for all these awful sins
and
people who need to be convicted of this. And then he says, and that's me.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And that ties the excursions together, but it doesn't make them not excursions yet. But yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So what's this about? Give me a title. What's this excursion about? I mean, if this was all you read, what I just read, that's all you heard, what would you say that paragraph is?
Look at me as an example.
Yeah. It's my redemption, right? I was a terrible guy. I was chosen. I was shown abundant mercy. I was actually put in a position of service, of all things. You know what I mean? And really, I'm an example of to me first. You know what I'm saying? So if you had to give a title, it'd be something like, I just call it Paul's Redemption. You see that? All right. So what I'm trying to do in this class period is show that maybe these things, as Steve says or Jason says, are not really an excursion, right? Maybe there's something related to that. So if the false teachers, well, maybe you should tell me. First of all, you've already noticed that these are very similar in the sense that they talk about terrible sins. Both of them do, right? And they both end kind of with a discussion of the gospel, at least the salvation that comes, right? Right? So that's one thing. So what do you think? How do those fit in this whole idea that you have a charge to stop these men who are teaching? I have a ministry in the gospel, and you're going to, I'm transferring this charge to you, verse 18. How do these excursions fit?
Yes. I see it as keeping them on the path. You know, Paul came and has helped establish a church. He came back to visit. He left Timothy behind to make sure that they didn't get off track like they started to.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's trying to keep them on the path. That,
yeah.
You know, don't get off.
Yeah, even
forget the core thing. The law is important to the lawful people. He is a good example because he had done terrible things and got forgiveness for it. You know,
this okay. So he's a personal example. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other thoughts about this? Yeah. Go ahead. No, Dustin. Go ahead.
Make sure the use of the law is like you are using the law correctly and these other men are going to use the law correctly. Because what we see is if it's not going to make those who are unholy holy, if it's not going to make those who murder their fathers and mothers not do that anymore, if it's not going to change those things, then we're not using it right. If it's not creating, like, changing someone who's the chief of sinners
sure.
into something yeah. more and what giving them a ministry, then it's
right.
not, then we're not using it right.
Was it merely the law that brought about Paul's redemption?
It's the faithful saying.
No, in fact, almost by contrast, it's the faithful saying that you say, Jesus Christ came to the world to save sinners of whom I'm chief. So there is a sense in which he says, you know, there's a good purpose for the law, but it's for evil convicting people, right? And by the way, I was one of those, but the gospel is the answer. You know what I mean? That seems to be what he's saying. And that seems to me, is at one level, it's certainly a contrast to these stupid fables and confusing things that they, you know, didn't even know what they were talking about. And the other thing is, it seemed like their motive was not to clarify, but rather to be almost confusing and questioning, causing faith to be destroyed rather than to edify. You know, so that, yeah, Jason.
And that's why the gospel is, as he calls it, glorious, as opposed to the meaningless fables.
Which, yeah. Or even the old law by itself, which just convicts evil people,
yeah.
right? It's not sufficient.
Which was still, as he said, powerless.
Right. So back to the point I made earlier, some say that these letters are not genuine because he doesn't emphasize the soteriology, you know, the doctrine of salvation. You see that is emphasized in this chapter. It's almost like the underlying basis for saying why you don't teach these stupid things that they're talking about and why you have this charge in ministry. Right? And why you have this charge I'm transferring to you. You see, that it's almost like the gospel story undergirds that whole thing.
You
the Old Testament law.
Other than the gospel is a waste of time.
Yeah. He calls it vain disputings. There are a few, so does that help at all? Do you see how these may not be as wild of excursions as it seems? Paul got off on a story about himself. I don't know how he did that, you know. Or he got off on a list of sins of how terrible people in the world are. There's maybe more to it than that. But you can see, even in the use of law, well, anyway, you got that. So, I did put some of these words up here. I think we've kind of covered the text. I feel like we kind of got the picture right. There's the three anchor points and then the two excursions, if you will. But there's some of the words that are kind of interesting. Again, the word nomos appears over and over in that little section there. As a noun, an adjective, and an adverb, and it's a compound word called teachers of the law. And actually, there's a word up here called teach no other doctrine. In the Greek, that's one word. Charge these men that they teach no other doctrine. That's English. But do you notice the same word repeated in English? It's not repeated in the Greek. In the Greek, it's different teaching. And that Greek word is not found anywhere else except here, and even in other Greek languages it is. And some have kind of accused Paul of making up words, which he probably did, because in a way, it's a play on words, a heterodidaskal, as opposed to the, where is it down here? Desire to be teachers of the law, which I didn't put in there. I should have. It's nomodidaskal. So he's just saying they're not teachers of the law, they're teaching a different stuff. That's kind of what he's saying. He doesn't say teach other doctrines. He's saying teaching weird things, teaching different, not teaching law. That's kind of what he's saying here. And it's a kind of a play on words. I want to mention a couple other things. Homosexual, yeah. That word there is actually a word for men or mankind in bed. And what it really is, just it's almost like in the Greek describing the act that a homosexual would perform. It's not about, oh, it's a violent act, or it's a, you know, some, as you'll see in some of the arguments that the Bible really doesn't condemn us. It's just a literal word. It says a man going to bed with another man. That's what it is, simply that. And that word is also found in 1 Corinthians 6, same word. And paired with that is the word for soft or effeminate. It's the same word with John said, did you go out to see someone soft in soft raiment? So he's saying there's this men in bed with each other, or there's this soft effeminate kind of thing. Those are the, that's 1 Corinthians 6. Only two times this word is used, but I thought that was an interesting thing. And I mentioned before that kidnappers really is literally men stealers, and I think that ties it to thou shalt not steal in the Ten Commandments. And I think you know all these. My ministry, unfortunately, is... But anyway, that's where it is. And then this word charge or command appears three different times. It's the same Greek word. So even if it says in your eye, you know, I command you, that's really the word for charge. And it has a military flavor to it. It's a set of orders. You've got some orders and you're going to go to war. This is your post. Here's what you got to do. You know, so that's the sense of that word. It's found throughout here. And he talks about